One of my earliest and happiest memories was going to Northland Mall in Southfield with my mom. We'd shop at Hudson's or maybe get a corned beef sandwich at Brothers for a treat. And I would always have to be lifted up to sit atop Marshall Frederick's The Boy and the Bear sculpture tucked in there right behind the boy. Northland was our mall, including the day that I found my wedding dress there at Hudson's. Well, cut to some 40 years later, as NPR business reporter Sonari Glinton is looking into the history of malls for a series with Youth Radio. Sonari, why did you use Northland as Exhibit A of the rise and fall of the American mall?
Well, it's one of the first malls, and it's also emblematic of sort of the problems and the promises of malls right now. So if you look at it, it looks a little long in the tooth. It's not, you know, all up and operating. That's sort of the sign of what's happening in malls right now.
Yeah, and we see it from coast to coast. And when I remember this, going back to what we know are the glory days of Northland, the 50s and the 60s, I don't think the term mall was not even used. It was Northland Shopping Center. We went to the shopping center, and then they enclosed it in 74 as we all began to embrace the idea of the mall. But you were pointing out to us in your piece for NPR that it's really Detroit and car culture and the history of malls that are all wrapped up.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, as a gentleman from the Henry Ford Museum said in my story, the car builds Detroit. Detroit builds the mall, and the mall and the car, you know, lead to the problems of Detroit. 1954, when this mall was opened, was the peak of receipts in downtown Detroit. It's as if they built this mall and said, okay, we're moving to the suburbs. And then everyone got up and went there. They're like, oh, we don't have to go all the way downtown. Let's go out near to home, and we have all the things we need, and we don't have to look for parking. And it's so innovative. I mean, when you think about Northland Mall, when you walk around there, it looks like every mall should look. But you think about 1954 and having a well-lit parking space. That was revolutionary. Like, I can just drive up and there will be a parking space.
That I don't pay for?
that I don't pay for. And nowadays, like, we assume that there's going to be parking. Like, there better be parking, right? You don't need the big lot to remind you that they have an extra space for you. I mean, all these little things were so innovative there. But what's interesting to me is that it's like the Stormcrow. It's like a harbinger of doom for downtown Detroit. As soon as that mall opens, it is the days of downtown Detroit are numbered.
And you had the sister malls. You had Eastland, Westland, and Southland. So they basically covered the Metro Detroit area to say, hey, come on here. And we certainly have spent a lot of time on this show talking about the effect of the 1967 riots and Detroit's troubles. So at the same time as people are leaving Detroit, here are the malls and more of them operated. And I'm sure that this story has been repeated from the Atlantic to the Pacific.
Yeah, I mean, it's like if Farmer Wilson had a farm and you had a Macy's and a Sears and Roebuck, you could build the mall and you can get people to come to you. Right now, the country is over-retailed. We just have too much retail space.
Yeah.
And places like Sears and JCPenney's are not doing as well. That doesn't mean that the mall is dying necessarily. It's going through a transition, and we're going to see the difference in the years to come. I mean, I live here in Los Angeles, and you can already see what we have in store for the future.
Well, in fact, I saw some figures. One jumped out at me that a decade ago, we had more than 1,100 enclosed shopping malls in this country. And today, about 400 of those have been repurposed or closed down. And boy, that website, deadmalls.com, is pretty sad, packed with all these photos and remembrances of defunct malls. What factors do you see playing into the decline of the American mall?
One of the things is we've come to realize that when we got rid of that downtown, we kind of liked it, you know?
Like, yeah.
It was sort of cool to go to one place and, like, walk around in streets in the natural environment, whether it's cold or warm. But then there's the internet. So every year, a percentage of the receipts get shaved off. If you're a mall owner, you see, like, your tenants just not doing as well a little bit every year. People are distracted. Kids don't necessarily need to go to the mall to meet their friends and have fun. They can just do it in their bedroom. You know, there's all this stuff that didn't exist before. And the internet is really sort of focuses the attention on shopping because it's such an easy thing to get rid of.
Sonari, I saw the Department of Commerce reported that e-commerce sales for the second quarter of 2014 accounted for 6.4% of total sales. So, yeah, that's there. But I have to think there are bigger and other things happening as well.
I mean, 6%, that seems small, but when you take out things that are normally in the retail numbers, that number seems artificially small. Mm. So when you look at back-to-school shopping, right, if I need to get, you know, my Trapper Keepers and all that stuff,
right.
Do I really need to go to the mall to get that? Would I? I might probably do that online. But what people are looking for now at malls, and this is what those 400 stores that you talked about, 400 malls being repurposed, is things like lifestyle centers and power centers. And a lifestyle center might have more restaurants than it has little stores. It might have, you know, two main acts during the day. It might have a train that runs through it where you can take your kids. It might have a park where you can go and have a picnic. I mean, as long as you get there, right, and
right.
you are spending some kind of money, that's what they want. Now, will we have all the malls, all the two anchor malls that we know of? Some of those malls are going to go away. If you're the third mall in Dexter, you're probably, you know, in trouble. There's not a third mall in Dexter, but you know what I mean. If you have a mall and you're in a small town and you don't have, you know, all that traffic, you're probably in some big trouble. And if you aren't able to sort of repurpose how you're doing business.
And I have to think that we really do have a different retail landscape, apart from the fact that we can go on, you know, at work and click, 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 and you've bought something. I also think that, you know, in 1960-something, when we would go shopping for school clothes or whatever, there wasn't a store like a Target or a Walmart. Because I can tell you, that's where we would see ourselves going for all those school supplies, because you could run to one corner and, you know, get the folders of the Trapper Keepers and then go a few steps away and, you know, buy the clothes and then pick up groceries. So that, I think, made a dent. But I also think we've seen, for example, anchor stores like Mervyn's fell into bankruptcy, and then you got other names gobbled up by bigger fish. Like here in Southeast Michigan, we saw Marshall Field's gobble up Hudson's, and then Macy's came right along and gobbled up Marshall Field. So is the fact that there are fewer anchor stores around, is that hurting malls? You can't hang them all on fewer anchor stores.
Well, I think that it's actually a little more different. I think that we are growing up a little bit, right? When we look at the numbers, we see that the high-end malls and the lower-end malls are where things are okay. It's in that middle. And I think part of what's happening in that case, like I would drive from Ann Arbor to the Somerset Collection. I'm not a Somerset Collection kind of guy, right?
Right.
But I would like to walk around and maybe stop off and have lunch. And maybe I might pick up a coat or some shoes. That is a thing that is happening around the country. So when we look at the malls that are struggling, the Somerset Collections, those places,
it's cranking.
They're doing fine.
They are
A-OK.
Find a parking spot on any given Sunday at Somerset Mall.
Yeah.
Good luck.
It's your Briarwood. It's your mid-tier mall where the average person, you know, goes to shop. Because the average person is like, well, maybe I'll go out to the fancy mall and see how the other half lives and then, you know, get some food or something like that. I mean, that's what's going on. It's really in that center because so much of that work you could do for back-to-school shopping, right, that's not fun. You can just go through a list and click, but walking into Tiffany's, that's fun, right? You know, having a latte, that's fun. So all the sort of the boring, mundane parts of the mall are sort of going away. And the fun, let's see a band at the mall. I mean, think about that. I mean, like, that's a funny thing that, you know, people will go to see entertainment and go to classes and, you know, city halls are moving into malls. I mean, there's because at the same time where we're over retailed, you can't just like abandon a lot of this space. And there has to be a use for it.
And that's what I'm wondering, too, for the ones that have had to be repurposed or they've been abandoned. What's being done with these empty buildings? That's a lot of real estate.
One of the stories we did in our series was about a really innovative concept in Stockton, California, where some mall owners. Well, the mall owners and kids sort of came up with a punk mall. Now, the problem in a lot of the country is that, you know, you can't sort of turn your mall into an art project, right? So what a lot of times are happening in these repurposings is, you know, your doctor's office will go into the mall. It brings traffic. It's good for, you know, patients because they can go for a walk. They don't have to sit in a doctor's office. You know, we're rethinking these sort of suburban town squares. It's really, they're turning back into that, and they're really sort of looking for how they can use their space wisely. When you look at the companies that own these malls, they are rejiggering their portfolio so they can get the top-end malls in one category and the mid-tier malls in another category so they can spend those off. They really want to have those high-end malls because that's where the receipts are really, really high. I should also say that mall traffic is down, but receipts are up. So that's an interesting little thing because I know what things cost. I don't need to go on a fishing expedition, right, to go to the shopping mall. I know how much a Trapper Keeper is. But when I'm going to buy something, I'm armed with information. And I think that's the average consumer has an infinite amount more information. So they may spend less time, but we're spending a little more money. I'm going to buy the knickknacks online, but I'm going to wait to get my giant TV at, you know, at the mall.
That's fascinating stuff. And your point about we kind of realize we miss the walkable downtowns. We certainly see a push to create that. And I'm even thinking of a couple of shopping centers in the Metro Detroit area that recreate what the old Northland felt like before it was enclosed. Partridge Creek is open air. Walking hither and yon, Village of Meadowbrook in Rochester Hills is open air. Because I remember when that opened, I thought, yep, we have circled back to what Northland felt like before they decided to seal it up and enclose it. So getting outdoors and dealing with rain and snow is part of it.
Yeah, that's what's funny is that, like, that's why it's so innovative, right? If it existed the way it did in 1954, it might be more successful than it is now. The idea of getting out and wandering around and getting, you know, the music and the stuff that goes into the mall. I should also say that Northland, you know, at that mall, there was a lot of entertainment going on. I mean, this is not a new thing. It wasn't just Santa. It was Broadway performances sometimes. There was a lot being done, especially in the 70s, to get people in that mall as Detroit was sort of changing. And it was still really important to the Hudson's Corporation to get people there. So there was a lot of extravaganzas that happened at that mall, wedding shows and things like that. That's what the mall owner falls back on. If I can't get the people in because the Sears is doing gangbusters, maybe I can put on a show.
And as you say, everything old is new again, because that's exactly what you see at the likes of the Somerset Mall. You could come in and see a show, or there could be a collection of movie costumes, whatever. But there's always a little something extra there. Talking malls and talking our shopping habits with NPR business reporter Sonari Glinton. Always great talking with you, Sonari. Thank you.
It's good to be with you, as always.